Accession number 31693, Reel 2.
Mr. Robson, Reel 2. Mr. Robson, Reel 1. Did the cadets have an official title?
It was just the Army Cadet Force, Derrimut County Army Cadet Force. And that was, I can't even remember whether we had, we must have had a platoon or a company name at Ryup, but I can't remember it. But I remember that, if I remember rightly, we were the 2nd Cadet Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry. And as I say, headquarters was in Same Harbour. And we had various companies or platoons stretched right through Sunderland. So it was quite a big area, yeah.
So your riot would be company strength, would it?
Although it was down as company strength, I think our strength was about between 20 and 30, which I think at that time was quite good. And it was only a Nissen hunt we had. I mean, even now, I can remember it. It was a white building, and I used to actually have the keys for it. I was the official key holder for it. So again, a bit more responsibility.
And what rank commanded your particular unit?
It was a sergeant who was in charge. I think he became sergeant major. Yeah, he became sergeant major. This is the guy I met recently. And it was... But we never had an officer.
And you've mentioned rifle. Did you get any training in other aspects of weaponry with the cadets?
LMG. The old Bren gun, and we were, and I can always remember we used to have the weapon skills, what we used to call dry shooting, i.e., we used to have a little disc we used to hold up to our eye, and I always, even to this day, made sure that I checked that there was nothing in the breach, because I've seen accidents happen later on when I came in the army. So yeah, we checked. We did just those. I mean, it was just LMG and the 303. And later, this guy who was in charge of us tried to form a band, a cadet band, bugles, but I couldn't blow bugle, and I didn't have. They tried it with a big bass drum, and I was useless at that as well. So I gave that up as a bad job.
So how often during the week did you meet?
I think we met on... Thinking back now, I think we used to meet twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we used to go down weekends. And sometimes... We stayed on a Saturday night doing our own food. And I remember once we had a weekend away down at Wynyard Park. And we had a long weekend, went down on a bus with all our equipment. And I think we actually went down with our rifles as well. I don't know how we got away with it. But we did, as I say, we had a long weekend down there. And again, just mucking in, and I can't remember even where we got the tents from. If we lived in tents, I just can't remember that. But I distinctly remember at the end of the camp, we had all this tin food, and everything went in a big pot. And we actually washed a spade in a trough, and use that to stir the big the big pot of stew round, and everything was in it.
And the kind of activities, again, we've been talking about activities, was it in a sense kind of basic light infantry Training within the
When I first went in, it was light infantry drill.
Which you're after, you became artillery.
And then we became artillery for some reason. I don't know why. It was a general reorganisation, and we became an artillery unit for some reason. Although since then I've found out that there was a big artillery unit in Sunderland, and we became part of them for some reason. Because this is an artillery unit, if I remember rightly reading the history, which were taken prisoner at Singapore.
So could you take me through a typical evening when you've gone down to the drill hall as cadets, of course, and take me through a typical evening, it's the kind of thing you might have been doing that evening in general?
We all used to meet, we're all on parade at 7 o'clock at night, all in our uniforms. We'd be fell in and we'd do a roll call, which is normal, an inspection. First half hour, if I remember rightly, we'd be doing foot drill, and then we'd be split up into sections and doing map reading, tank recognition, and doing stripping the LMGs and 303s, and stripping them right down and going through them all and doing the normal infantry soldiers' duties and drills on a night. And everybody actually encouraged to get up and give a little talk on anything they wanted. Introductions. We all had our jobs to do as well. We'd have a 15 minute break for a cup of tea, and then we'd go back on to doing other infantry drills, and we used to finish at about 9 o'clock at night.
Did they give you any talks or lectures, say for example on the history of the regiment?
No.
Was that instilled into you?
Not that I can remember. I don't think there was any talks on the history of the regiment that I can think about. As I said, because we changed to Royal Artillery as well, and also our main instructor was a Northumberland Fusilier, so I don't think he had the knowledge of the Durham Light Infantry. I mean, what I can remember of the Durhams, of what I personally remember, was going and playing football at Bransworth Camp for the county. That was our home ground when we played other counties. And the only other person I ever met, apart from that, was a friend of mine whose brother was a national serviceman in the Durham Light Infantry. But that was before I joined the army.
Did you have any experiences of bullying amongst the lads?
In the cadets?
Cadets.
None whatsoever. There was bullying at school. I remember that. Because I remember even being bullied myself when I was in junior school. But fortunately, one of the lads who was in the year ahead of me nipped it in the bud straight away. But his family was friends of my family, and he nipped it in the bud. And that was the only time I'd been subject to bullying. Going back to in senior school, I don't think I can't remember any bullying as such. No, I can't remember any bullying. And even in the cadet force, there was no bullying.
What was the background of the lads coming into the cadets?
All the same as me. All lads. Because there was, from what the only clubs that were going at the time was the church clubs. If you had to go to church, the scouts, You had to go to church if you wanted to be in the Scouts. And one thing throughout my life, I will not be coerced into doing something I don't want to do. And that was been some of my problems through my army career, army prison service career. I won't be forced to do anything.
Good. So and I think you said that when you did change the Royal Artillery, essentially your training didn't change, you just carried on.
Just carried on. It was just a name change.
Yeah. So how long were you in the cadets in total?
In total, I left just before. Originally, you're supposed to be 13 years and 10 months. I joined a bit before that. I think I was about 13 and a half. And I left for a short time when I became a little bit disillusioned. After I rejoined, I left the Army Cadets just before I joined the Army. So I was nearly 18.
And before we go into that stage, what was the kind of life, activities, leisure that a teenager get up to, other than the cadets, when you weren't at the cadet on cadet nights? What were you doing?
Playing football. To be perfectly honest, I always wanted to be a professional footballer. It's 16-year-old, I was playing in a senior league, Wayside Combination League, and I believe at that time I was the youngest player to ever have played in it, and I was playing against adults, miners, shipyard workers, hospital workers, general labourers, and I was, let's say, a 15-16 year old, and I stayed with that team right until I left. And I can remember the manager of the team had said, and again, being naive at that age, there's a team coming that want you to sign for them, but I'm trying to negotiate to get a full strip, a new strip for the team for you. He says, and until then, you can't leave because you've signed for us and your registration is held by us with the Durham FA, so you can't go unless we say so. And being naive, I accepted that. But at the time, it was to play for the, I can't remember the team at the time, but it was the biggest league in County Durham at that time, and I couldn't travel, to be perfectly honest, because at that time, when I was working at the paper mills, I was on shift work. I was still learning all the machinery. I was still learning how to be a foreman, and I just couldn't afford to not work weekends, because at that time we were still short on cash, and I couldn't play because at that time you used to get paid for playing football, not a lot, but it was still money, but I couldn't afford to give up double time at the factory to go. So I used to play football when I had free time. And apart from that, Evenwood Town, I think it was. There was the team I was offered to play with, but I had no transport to get to the mine. And to get there from working as well, it was impossible. So I just stayed with the junior football until I joined the army.
So essentially, cadets and football were almost took up all your
time. All my time, yeah, yeah. And I didn't drink. I didn't drink until I joined the army.
So your mother must have given in at the end of the day to your desire to go into the army as a regular.
It was something she didn't want me to do. I don't know whether it was because of fear. I just don't know. But when I became 18, the desire to join the army again was there. And I just went to my mum and said, I still want to join the army. She says, well, you're old enough to know your own mind. And at that time, you didn't have to have parents' permission at 18 to enlist. So there's a guy at work, I think they call him McAllister, and he came from the same village, and I just said, think we'll join the army. He said, well, I'll come with you. I said, do you know what you're doing? I says, I know what I'm doing. So we off went. We went down to the Army Careers Office in Sunderland, and we both took a test.
What test would that be?
This would be the army test. It was English, maths, and the other one was an intelligence test. And depending on what you got on this test, depending on where you could go. So we took the test. And I remember it was a sergeant from the, or a colour sergeant from the DLI. And he came in and sat us both down and said to my friend, he says, Mike, he says, the only thing you can join is the infantry. He says, your tests are not good enough to offer you anything else. And he turned to me and said, you've qualified for all regiments and corps. You can go into wherever you want. You can choose any trade you want. And I looked at a friend of mine who was so disheartened. I said, well, he said, I still want to join the army. I said, all right, then we'll stick together then. So I said to the cousin, what you in? And on the top was Durham Light Infantry. I said, we'll go on the Durhams. I said, I know a little bit about the Durhams. So we'll go in there. And so we both enlisted. And it was the 2nd of the 2nd, 1960. And then, of course, at those times, you weren't sent away straight away. Oh, we had to go for our medical as well.
I was going to ask you about medical, yes. Was it a good medical or extensive medical?
Quite an extensive medical, yeah. In Sunderland. I believe it was a doctor's in John Street in Sunderland. And we went in, had our medical. We both passed. And we both got the Queen's shilling.
And that was an actual shilling that you got?
We got a shilling.
And did you have to do the promise, you know, the...
Oh, yes. Yeah, the allegiance to the Queen.
Allegiance,
yes. Did we... I can't remember now. Yes, we did. We did. We had to have two references. And the guy said to me, he says, the staff sergeant said to me, he says, right, you work. I said, No, I said, don't send a reference to my work. They won't be very happy because they've just spent all this money on me, training me to be a foreman. So they won't be very happy. I said, no. So I gave them, obviously, relatives, well, not relatives, but friends of the family, and my local doctor, Jim Gillen, he actually did one reference, and the family friend did the other reference. And when they came back, we went back and enlisted. And this was so we enlisted on the 2nd of February 1960, and were given unpaid leave until we got our papers to go to Bransworth, join up at Bransworth Camp. And the funny part about it, I went back into work once I got notification that I put in my notice to leave, and we had a Scottish not foreman, but he was manager, and when I actually went in and put my notice in to leave, he wasn't a very happy chappy, saying that they spent all this money training me to actually take over and be a foreman, and I was leaving to go in the army. I can't remember what day. I think it was March. And it was a very, very cold March. And we got our little passes and turned up at Bransforth Camp to join the Durham Light Infantry.
Did you join both cadets and army? What, a strong sense of adventure do you think you had? Or was
oh.
You didn't really have a family background for the military, did you?
None whatsoever. Hello. My mother did say that my father, and I don't know how true it was, served in the Durham Light Infantry in the First World War. Did six weeks training. Was in France for 6 weeks and was taken prisoner. And spent the remainder, I think it was around about 1917, he was called up. But I can't confirm it. Speaking to my sister...
It would be a reason why she didn't want you to join the army, wouldn't it?
It probably was, yeah. Speaking to my sister, because my sister's still alive, she's 80, she can't confirm that. So I'm going to have to see if I can do a little bit of digging and find out if my dad actually did go in. But from what I can gather, because of his height, he was in the little...
Bantams.
He was in the Bantams. From what I can gather, he was in the Bantam Battalion, I think, which was the 18th or the 19th Battalion. But I've got to do a little bit of digging and find out if that's true.
So you've arrived at the gates of Bransforth Castle. How were you received?
Very friendly, in actual fact. I'm still in touch, and I still see the guy every first Monday in the month. Bob Scott, who was a Lance Corporal on the Regimental Police, and we were taken in, and it was a blur after that. It was just a blur the first two or three days, but I do remember that they didn't have any proper uniform for me, and I was given, would you believe it, and this is in a March, olive green Far East uniform.
Pretty thin.
Thin. And it was absolutely freezing. There was snow on the ground. But I met some good guys. And we were actually allocated, and I was allocated at the Inkerman platoon. And the other platoon was Salamanca platoon. And my platoon sergeant was Sergeant Carr, ex-wartime soldier, who I had a lot of time for. And one of the corporals was a man called Corporal Leck, who is still around to this day and lives in Chesley Street, who my wife knows, only purely because my wife works for the Halifax, and he's a customer. And it was quite funny how that came about. It was in a Durham Light Infantry reunion last year. Some photographs were dished out, and my wife said, I know him. And I sent messages through to him. But he won't attend any, unfortunately, won't attend any reunions, because unfortunately he became an alcoholic and he doesn't want to.
He's on my list.
And Fred.
He's actually said he'll see me.
Is he?
So I should be seeing him sometime in the next few weeks.
Good. When you see friends, he'll know Diane and Steve. Yeah, he was a lovely, lovely fella. So we became, so that's how I knew Fred. And Incan platoon, and because of my experience of being in the army cadets, I was chosen to help out in the training, believe it or not. And it was the last of the national servicemen who actually came in the army that I came in with. Some were professional footballers. A lot of them had just finished their apprenticeships. We even had one guy, he'd only been in the country 6 months, he could hardly speak English, never worn boots before, and he was actually discharged after a short time. We had a guy called Lofty Oak, who was the tallest guy, 6'6", We had the smallest guy in the platoon, Willie Spalding, and they couldn't march at light infantry pace to save their life. Both used to take the same pace, and it used to be quite funny watching the RSM McDowell marching Lofty Oak and Willie Spalding round the square to try and get them to march properly. Lofty Oak, unfortunately, he didn't stay with us because he just could not march at light infantry pace, and he was just totally alien to him of everything else. And he ended up in the, because he was an engineer as well, he ended up in the Royal Engineers.
Before we go into more detail on the stuff you're doing, was this the main camp still at Bransworth, the big camp? Was it still there?
It was still there.
Can you describe the camp to me?
Yes, as you walked in the main gate, it was all the stones and all the stonework around the guard room on the right hand side was all painted white. There was the flagpole with the DLI flag on the top. On the right hand, as I say, was the guard room, and then straight in front of it was the main square.
And that was hallowed ground, wasn't
it? That was very much hallowed ground. And on the left hand side was the NAFI, and behind those was the stores, and across the other side of the square were all the Nissen huts, dotted all round with the football pitch down at the bottom end as well. And it's about as much as I can remember it there, because on a Saturday morning, I remember the only time we were allowed on the square was during drill, and every Saturday morning we all had to go for a run, and we'd all line up on the square, go through the gate, turn right down the bank, turn right again past the COs, the adjutants and the RSM's quarters, all the way down towards Spenner, going down towards Spenner. And we used to have to do 7 miles cross country run every Saturday morning, and then back in through the back, and back in through the, and then I think we used to finish at about 12:30 on a Saturday morning. But you worked hard, very very hard. The Nissen huts, I remember distinctly. You used to have three steps, and then the door, and then there was a partition about a yard on both sides before you come into the barrack room. For some reason, I don't know why, but I chose the number one bed, which in hindsight was the wrong thing to do. And there used to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think it was 12 of us in that barrack room. And there was 2 pot-bellied stoves, one at either end, which were blackened. We weren't allowed to light the fires. They had to be kept immaculately clean. In the centre of the barrack room was two pieces of wood run right the length of the barrack room, 1 inch by 1 inch. They had to be, these one at either side, used to have to be, they were 1 inch by 1 inch lats all the way down, and in the centre, I think it would be a yard wide, was canvas, and that used to run the full length of the barrack room, and they had to be highly polished every day. And the only people who were allowed to walk on it were the instructors, which they did. And they used to walk the full length of that with their boots on. And if you remember, in those days, there was you had 17 studs in each boot with torn heel plates. And they actually did sink there, and it was mansion polish we used to have to polish them up with. It was immense.